The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hey there, welcome to a brand new episode of The Undercurrent. I'm Tara Sloan. So happy to be here with you and so excited to be here to talk about one of my favorite things, and it might be one of your favorite things too. I'm talking about the show Heated Rivalry. Now, in case you are one of the rare humans who has not heard of Heated Rivalry, I will happily fill you in. Heated Rivalry is a Canadian show created by filmmaker Jacob Tierney, based on a series of books by author Rachel Reid about rival professional hockey stars, both men, who fall for one another. Now, I'm simplifying things, but you get what I mean. It is a steamy, romantic, beautiful, aspirational show that has taken the world by storm, becoming not just a massive worldwide hit, but it's become a pop culture phenomenon unlike any I've witnessed during my lifetime. Since Heated Rivalry's release in November of 2025, the cast has become famous, the entire cast. And the show's primary actors, Connor Story, Hudson Williams, Francois Arnault, they've become household names, sought-after guests on talk shows, in front rows of fashion shows, on red carpets everywhere, hosting SNL, carrying the Olympic torch, you name it. There is no doubt, too, that we are seeing the show's effect in hockey spaces and even at NHL arenas where more and more signs referencing the show are showing up, like the Boy Aquarium. You'll hear this during our interview. That is a reference to Heated Rivalry. But what about at the grassroots level? Well, to get a sense of the Heated Rivalry effect on local teams and leagues, I spoke to a few of the people really doing the work on the ground. Kieran Kiki Flaherty is the president of the San Francisco Earthquakes LGBTQ plus hockey team. He's been with the Quakes for over two decades. Yula Idemoto is the board president of the Northern California Women's Hockey League, a rec league founded in 1993 that provides women of all abilities a place to play hockey. And Brock McGillis, a dear friend, the first out gay pro hockey player and LGBTQ plus advocate and educator, affectionately known as Hockey Daddy. Please don't kill me for that, Brock. Now, in this conversation, we also talk about a recent policy change from USA Hockey that bans transgender athletes from most programs. A hugely disappointing move for many leagues, deeply, deeply upsetting and problematic. Here is our conversation about the Heated Rivalry effect. Hope you enjoy it. So thank you, everybody, for joining. This is so exciting because, honestly, in my real life, I talk about Heated Rivalry so much. So it's nice to have an excuse to do this in my work life. I want to know, and I'll ask this of everybody. Brock, I'm going to start with you. When did Heated Rivalry hit your radar? And maybe what were your thoughts initially, and, you know, what has maybe shifted?
So it initially hit my radar before it came out. I was actually filming a show, a Jared Kiso new show, and he did Letterkenny, and Shorzy is one of the main actors and executive produced it. And he's doing a new show, and I did a guest cameo in it. And when I was on set, he was telling me about Heated Rivalry because, what can I think of his name?
Jacob Tierney.
Thank you, yes. Jacob. Jacob used to be a producer on Letterkenny.
Right.
And then it came out and my husband was like, you need to watch this. You need to watch this. Please watch this. And I was like, absolutely not. Refused. And then I tried to watch it. And I slammed the laptop down about five times. I was in Calgary on tour and I just couldn't, because it was so triggering, because I've literally lived it. And it was, you know, from the scene of the, in Montreal, in a stairwell, sneaking, Rozanov out, of his condo in Montreal. I literally did that in Montreal, living in Montreal. Wow. So
That's
I
what
just
they
kept
say.
shutting the laptop, but I agreed to do some press, so I had to force myself to open it and watch it. And yeah, I think I'm gonna send Jacob Tierney and the rest of the Heated Rivalry gang.
Oop, Brock, sorry. I was trying to mute Kiki, but I muted you.
That's all right. I'm just gonna
Okay.
send them my therapy bill for the triggering experience I had watching that show. But it's evolved since. I like it. I like what it's done to broaden hockey audiences and hopefully recruit. I hate using this like corporate type language, but like recruit and retain new audiences to the sport because we need to. Hockey can be so empowering and so wonderful, and I would love to see more marginalized folks here, especially on the men's side of the sport.
Well,
There's
so
big things on the women's side.
that's what I mean, that's sort of my question, because obviously, I know my entire social media feeds are all Heated Rivalry related. But I really do wonder, and Kiki and Eula, this is why I wanted to have you on, is, what is the reality of this show's effect in grassroots hockey? Kiki, I'll ask you, San Francisco Earthquakes, have you felt the heated rivalry effect? And also, what are your personal thoughts on the show?
Oh, absolutely. I've heard and felt the heated rivalry effect. In fact, as a way of promoting and elevating real LGBTQ hockey, we did do a promotional event at the Stud in San Francisco, a heated rivalry sort of rave party that they had been promoting as a way to promote our other efforts at outreach and reaching out to communities that traditionally haven't been represented in hockey. And, my reaction to it at first was like, okay, very much fantasy, very much fluff, very much a story that involves soft porn, and fine, I'll go along for the ride. I enjoyed the surge of curiosity in hockey from the variety of groups that previously hadn't given it much thought. And then as I started to watch more episodes, I began to realize, huh, it's not purely fantasy. I can imagine that professional hockey players or other hockey players, may have had the similar need to be in the closet or managed being in the closet because of their profession. In this way, I know certainly for people of a certain age that it had a resonance with us. And several guys on my hockey team that are, we're in our 60s now, believe it or not. And, back when I was in high school, the only way that I could be in touch with my high school partner when we each went to separate colleges was not to call him at home because his mom was onto us. There was no texting, there was no internet. My parents, when we were both home for Christmas, was wondering why I wanted to go to church with them because that's where I was going to be able to meet up with him and make a hookup, right? It's a different thing now in northern Minnesota than it was back then, but some of those same dynamics are absolutely in play in northern Minnesota and beyond. So for me, it had a resonance. I think for a lot of guys on our team, it had a resonance. And I'll let you have a chat with some of the other folks, but I do want to talk about sort of some of the triggering and negatively triggering impacts that some of our players have talked about as well.
Okay. Well, we'll circle back to that. And Brock, we can again talk a little bit more about what it hit on for you.
I can't wait to talk about my trauma and stuff. But
and how big that the therapy bill actually will be. Eula, I'm gonna ask you, with the Northern California Women's Hockey League, this is a very inclusive league. So there are gender non-binary, queer, trans, so all kinds of people are with the league. What have you found, if any, has been the effect of this show, and did you enjoy it?
yeah, I mean, so we have seen like an absolutely direct impact when the show came out. We have a notification list that we run, and from January to November, we had 75 hits. And then after Heated Rivalry came out, from December to now, we have had 140. So 100% increase in interest in playing local hockey, checking out the league. We've been very, very vocal about wanting to be very inclusive, especially with everything kind of going on with USA Hockey. And so we have opened up spaces like our Give Hockey a Try Day. We do that twice a year. We filled up immediately the first one that we opened. We had to hold a second one. We had 100 people come out over 2 sessions just trying hockey. And our conversion rate right now is about a 40% conversion rate from trying hockey, like just to have fun, to coming into the league, which is just like an immense amount of growth for us. We're over well over 300 skaters in the league, in the women's league now. And I think you can't deny, literally, there's a date, like Heated Rivalry came out November 28th. And then like the 2 months after, we just had this huge spike in interest. And when we did Give Hockey a Try, we were sort of joking and asking like, oh, who's here for Olympics, or Give, or Heated Rivalry. And Heated Rivalry was like way louder than the Olympics. So, we kind of assumed that, of course, Olympics every, drums up interest. But yeah, I think there's something about it that really speaks to the community. And there's always been a very deep and pervasive like representation issue in hockey. And so anything that creates resonance for folks that just haven't seen themselves in the game, I think always, that shows up for us in the league. And we're glad to be able to provide a space that allows folks to sort of find a community here in the Bay. So yeah.
So, like for me as a cis straight woman, there's also like there's a sense of relief in some way that there's a story about, that embodies masculinity in a super non-toxic way, right? Like there's something that's just like so nice and easy to watch and enjoyable. I mean, I'm not easy to watch, obviously, because there are two very beautiful co-stars. But do you know what I mean, Eula? Like, does that kind of resonate with you as a woman, that we are seeing this representation of these really accomplished athletes, but they're not this sort of toxic masculine stereotype?
Well, I think certainly for anyone that's, I've played hockey recreationally my whole life, but started in co-ed, which is largely male and, cisgender white male. And so, yeah, there's a journey, I think, any for women that play hockey, even recreationally, go on around like fitting in some way. And so seeing a different kind of representation of what it could look like is different. And I think it's something that we're sort of processing. But yeah, I think that's definitely a journey that even in rec league we go on. We start and you don't know where to get dressed sometimes, and it feels like a very, they're, even as a woman. And then you kind of acclimate in the perception, I think, socially of traditional hockey is very masculine and very kind of, so seeing a different side of that, I think, makes it more accessible and makes it more enjoyable for the rest of us that do just play at a recreational level. So yeah, there's definitely some connections and resonance there.
So, Kieran, I'll just come back to you and Brock. We don't have to touch on it if you don't want. But Kieran, what were you saying about, some of the reaction from the Earthquakes players?
We had a couple players on our team, maybe even a few players on our team that really didn't enjoy the surge of curiosity until they noted that it was bringing more people into our team, which is, geared around providing a safe place for a lot of people that really left hockey because it was a hostile or even dangerous environment. That's what a lot of the people on our team experienced when they were young, and even some when they were in adult recreational leagues. And so what it was for them was just this fantasy that promoted hockey as a safer space than what their experience with hockey was, and in some cases, what their experience with hockey is. Particularly for members of our team who are transgender, to see the juxtaposition of like the USA Hockey eligibility policy that was passed last November, going into effect shortly in April, that we strongly oppose, is really something that was quite sort of triggering for them. On the other hand, I had the good fortune of being at the Olympics in Milan, and I was approached by people over and over and over again when I was repping the Quakes with our queer logo, hockey logo, and got a lot of questions from a lot of people, and I was able to have good and positive interactions with them, which often started with, "It's not like heated rivalry." Our team's not like heated rivalry, but in some ways we talk a little bit, and it was, people had to be in the closet and experience what it was like to be in the closet for fear of losing their job, whether it was related to hockey or not. And at the time our team started, it was a very real thing that people could lose their job for being associated, even in San Francisco, lose their job.
Brock, I'm wondering what you are hearing kind of in the greater community. You travel a lot for work. You're with different, teams, young teams. What's the sense of, what this show has, what kind of impact this show has had?
I just want to jump on what Kieran said. I was one of those people that had to be in the closet to play professional hockey. I live, that life, and it is relatable in that sense, and can be triggering for some, was for me, because like I dated a guy for 3 years without a soul knowing. Not a friend, family member, nobody. We had an alias for his friend so they couldn't find me on social media and figure out I was playing pro hockey, because after junior, I was so depressed and struggling with my sexuality that I was drinking heavily, had season-ending injuries every year, and my career derailed. I went from NHL draft list and supposed to have that linear trajectory to the NHL to struggling immensely, started having season-ending injuries. Before I knew it, I was in the minors in Europe, and I was like, the only way I'm going to make the NHL and have the career I was supposed to have is to take the long road. And if anything derails that, you're screwed, right? So the idea, the notion that being gay in this space, and I think that still exists today, it's going to be seen as negative, a distraction. I know it's a podcast, so I'm using air quotes. But that is still something that resonates for so many, and whether it's current hockey players who are out, or closet players who've come to me, this in the ones who have about this show, they felt that same trigger, they felt that same feeling. And in the broader hockey community, I got into a little bit of media hot water. I ended up being the 24-hour news cycle in America because a journalist in the UK decided to take my words completely out of context, or remove the context from what I said, so then he could have a sensationalized quote. And I said this wouldn't positively impact a men's hockey locker room at a professional or elite level, and I don't think it will. The odd player, maybe. I think those players are probably already pretty progressive in their thoughts, views, and inclusion of folks. But it could have a negative effect. But ultimately, and that's what I had said, and it got flipped around before I knew it. The New York Post and People Magazine were saying that I said this bad for the community, which was wild, but an interesting 24 hours nonetheless. But I think the broader point is, this show isn't for hockey bros. It's really for the girls, the gays, and the theys. And that's phenomenal, because guess what? Hockey has, and most sports on the men's side, but hockey in particular, doesn't recognize their demos. 43% of NHL fans in America are women. Over 20% of NHL fans in America are LGBTQ plus. There is zero content made for us on the mainstream traditional broad. There's a lot of Dubrow stuff, but there's, less of the main, like the content that would entice those audience and attract more of those people, like what Heated Rivalry did. There needs to be more of it. So I think ultimately, I don't care what the hockey bros think of it. From my perspective, I don't think they give it too much thought. I don't think they really care from my perspective engaging with them. But I also don't care because it's not for them. It's for us. And we need more stuff for us.
Do you think, I mean, has there been a bit of an unfair, I don't know, like onus put on this? Like, of course, this is meant to be, I mean, I've spoken to Rachel Reed, the author. Like, this is meant to be a romance. This is meant to take people out of, their everyday life and give people these romantic happy endings that we all want. I don't like, of course, if it sh helps shift culture, and I do think it's shifting culture, but it's not, its job isn't to help the NHL, be more inclusive. It would be nice, but it's not its job.
Where I see it is, listen, it falls under the smut genre. That's an actual genre. It's not a negative connotation, and I've seen other authors talk about this recently that no, it is smut, and that's okay. Like, that's not a negative thing. It is smut. It is romance. It's all these things, and it's for certain demographics, which is great. I think the job of it is that is to entertain. But so is sport. Sport is entertainment, and I think the NHL, a lot of the media companies who are affiliated with the NHL need to look at it and go, what if we did more stuff, not just slap, heated rivalry everywhere, but what if we did more creative things to attract these audiences in because they want it. Now they want hockey, they want to go to the Boy Aquarium. They want all these things. So what if we did more to give them more instead of doing the bare minimum and looking at, like, I don't care what their reason. Like, if the NHL thinks it might sell more tickets or get higher viewership, they might be more intrigued by it. But I think there's been a tendency from the sport to go, we want you to come, but we want you to come on our terms. That's not how entertainment works. So now that you have this audience, you see it, give them more stuff.
Yeah,
It's
I
not the job of heated rivalry to do. And heated rivalry, I don't think is going. I think the long term, I'm going to push back on something you said that I don't believe that it's going to shift the culture.
You don't?
I don't know. I don't think it's what it's for. The people who are watching it were already, woke. And
Right.
but what I think it might do, it might, in a 20-year span, where more people are attracted to the game and it involves the audience, and it forces safer locker room environments, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, of the, and I'm talking at the NHL level, I'm not talking at the grassroots level. And force more equity and inclusion in these spaces long term, because the culture around it will evolve and the demographics are evolving of the fandom that are going to demand this. So the long term play, potentially. Short term, I don't think it has that impact, but I don't think that's what it's for.
Okay.
But if it brings us in, cool.
And this is an aside, and then Kieran and Eula, I'm going to come back to you. I will say that the podcasts, and some of them I think are okay, some I think are abhorrent. The Hockey Bro podcasts that were celebrated for watching Heated Rivalry and enjoying it, that pissed me off a lot because as somebody who, has sort of made it a life mission to, give exposure to diversity and inclusion in hockey, it angered me. Anyway,
Can I rant on that real quick?
real quick, but
Okay,
I
quick,
gotta
hey,
open the
last thing
floor.
I'll say the whole day. Listen, we need to stop putting straight men on a pedestal for doing the bare minimum.
Yes, thank
Stop
you.
celebrating them. They watched a podcast. We found out they didn't even like it. They did it for clicks and views.
Yes, I know.
Stop putting them on a damn pedestal.
I know. That's what I mean. Anyway, you said it very succinctly. Thank you. Okay. Let me think about where to go. I am going to come back to the USA hockey thing because that's an important part of this discussion. But let's just stay on Heated Rivalry for a moment. Do you think, I mean, let's talk about shifting the culture. and how the NHL has or hasn't used this. But you like I haven't heard from you in a bit, so I want to talk about, can a TV show help, that has actually sort of changed the zeitgeist, really? Like, I mean, it's been a long time since I've seen any cultural moment quite like this. Do you think that this can actually shift the culture in some way?
Yeah, I mean, I think what Brock shared actually really resonates with me, which is in our locker rooms in the NCAHL, like we love it. We're celebratory. Like there's just, but we don't have to convince the people in like our locker rooms to love it and celebrate it. I don't play in like co-ed hockey, and so I'd be curious about the impact in those rooms. I don't know if there is one, but I would just say that what I've seen is that it does bring a level of joy, in our at the grassroots level too, which is also great. It's like we recently had a tournament and we call it the Game Changer Tournament, and named all of the teams after Rachel Reed's books and all of that, and it was just celebratory, and that representation is still so lit small and so little that even these pieces that we get to kind of hang on to in our communities I think are still to be celebrated. But yeah, as far as like these deep culture changes, like I know we'll talk about the USA Hockey kind of situation, the player eligibility, but those are things that are really scary signals to us. Like we can enjoy heated rivalry while at the policy level we're still being targeted, our community is still being targeted. So yeah, there's that thing that we're kind of holding this duality about what it's like to be in in any type of hockey community right now.
Yeah, that is a really good point. Karen, I want to ask you about the NHL because as a member of the Earthquakes, had a really good relationship with the San Jose Sharks. I'm proud to work for a team that is progressive and inclusive. That the Pride scrimmage last month was just it was a beautiful thing, and it was beautiful to be in an NHL arena that felt so welcoming and so safe and so joyful. But there aren't a lot of some teams have like very subtly picked up on heated rivalry. That I don't believe that they have done what Brock said. Like, actually, you can take advantage of this because there is a whole new group of fans that, could be coming to the rink. What do you think about how the NHL and that world has treated heated rivalry?
So, I know for our relationship with the Sharks, which we have, said has not only been longstanding, but is also outstanding because they're very sincere in their support for our communities. They're very sincere in their efforts to grow the sport of hockey through the demographic that Brock and Eula were talking about. And so that's a little bit of what I view as sort of an exception. And I do think that there's a moment here that the NHL could have jumped on as an effort to say inclusion and, the need to make hockey a truly welcoming space for all players, including professional players, so that there is no need for people to be in the closet any longer. There is no need for people to be tortured and worried and anxious about these things. There's elements of the show that are extremely sex positive, especially for people that came of sexual age at a time of AIDS, when not having so-called safe sex could be deadly. And so there were many things. The way the family treated Shane when he came out, worried about invading his privacy more than worried about him being an actual gay person, and then having concern for how they may have contributed to his closetedness. These are things that I think are very positive. And by analogy, if the NHL could have jumped on that sort of thing, if the NHL could have said, we're looking to expand our reach out to other audiences. Hockey is a very difficult sport to pick up just by turning on a hockey game and watching clips of it or watching a portion of it. For people that aren't used to seeing a very small object and kind of being oriented to where people are on the ice. Not so in person. When you're in person, you really get that feel and you really get that rush. So if we want to grow the sport of hockey, there are some entrees that this could bring. I must say, and I don't know what Brock and Eula thought about this, or you, Tara, but when Gary Bettman said that he had binged watched Heated Rivalry, I thought, oh, to be a fly on the wall
Yeah, I wonder
when
if
that
it
was
was
happening.
because he knew the question was coming.
Yeah.
I wonder. And
But glad he watched
I'm glad he
it.
watched it too, and I'm glad. I believe it was San Jose Hockey Now's Sheng Peng that actually asked that question when the Sharks were in Washington. So I
That sounds on point.
shout out to Sheng for that. Brock, I'll just sort of end on this with you. What do you think the hesitation has been on the part of the NHL when this is literally the biggest pop culture moment of our time currently?
I'm going to preface this by saying the NHL's been, they sponsor my tour and they've been really good. And I think there's a lot of people, no, but they, and I don't want to
And
like,
I wait, listen, I work for an NHL team. We're being
yeah.
careful here. Yes.
They do, there's a lot of people that really care about doing good work at the NHL.
Yes.
I think there's a, they have to switch their mindset in the sense that instead of trying to get this, I think they want the fans. I think they want the fans on their terms versus creating stuff and jumping on board with things like Heated Rivalry, which would be on society's terms or the fans' terms. And I think their hesitation is, listen, there's some people that are, you know, probably far more conservative in the league and also in what they perceive to be their audience, which actually isn't in fact most of their audience. Their audience skews millennial Gen Z, it skews major urban center, it skews progressive. I've done all the studies on this, I've actually consulted on this, and they're making content for the football fan while and doing things as if their audience is something else than what it is. And I think they really believe, and maybe it's different groups within it, different people with massive voices within it feel that this is the route to go. And I think it's incredibly short-sighted, but I also think we don't show enough personality in our sport as is, like the men's players don't, and you're fortunate to have Celebrini and Smith there who show a little more. But you know, we wonder why the top players in hockey make less money than a backup player in the NBA. And it's like, well, you know, we're not embracing things, we're not allowing people to show personality, we're suppressing it, and it's you know. To Yulia's point earlier about like the joy and the fun that the show created, like we need more of that in sport. We see in the women's sport, we see in the PW, you know, on the women's side, but we're not getting it here. We need it.
Macklin Celebrini, by the way, when he negotiates his contract out of his entry level, will be NBA sized, I think. But I'm
Well,
that's a
not
that that no that's a,
LeBron
no
or,
that's
you
no it's
know.
it's you know it's supply and demand. Like there's a mass much bigger audience, and yes, I'd love to see hockey grow, and I'd love to see it grow in the fun, progressive, inclusive way. I want to get now to the USA Hockey participant eligibility policy that Eula was and Kieran were both referencing, and this is the real life what's happening all over the world, but specifically in the United States, with tons of anti-trans policies and rhetoric, and then now this. So Eula, can you explain it to me? There used to be a policy from I believe 2019, the
19,
transgender athlete eligibility policy that made it possible for anyone to play.
Yeah, it was more open, and certainly we didn't know about this ban, actually, to be honest, until one of our players reached out to us in early January, and they're like, "What are you all gonna do?" And I'm like, "Well, excuse me, we're members of CAHA, we're members of the California Amateur Hockey Association here in California, and also USAH. We pay every year our dues to the league, $15,000 amongst our 300 skaters. So But we were never engaged with about this policy. We didn't know it was happening. And so we are in this tailspin, mid-January, finding out it's going to be implemented in April. And we have players that are impacted, and also our community just as a whole is impacted by, like, how do we, face this sort of this what feels like overreach. Like, we really, our relationship with USA Hockey is really based on the secondary insurance that they provide and a magazine we get every month. Like, it's not like some huge support for our rec leagues or anything. So, we just found out, and then it was, when we reached out to USAH, it was really like, yeah, this, we're implementing it at the recreational league level, which we just couldn't get our heads around. Like, we're not going to nationals, we're not going to the Olympics, we're essentially a beer league, and then all of a sudden it's like, are you asking us to ask for, like, what folks were assigned at birth? Like, what is this? What do you mean? And we just kept getting this response, like, oh, we didn't know. We didn't realize all these implementation things. So it really impacted us in the sense of, like, we're a strong community. We've really tried to be committed to our values around inclusivity. And it felt like we were being told basically that we had to implement this without a conversation, without guidance. And it was just like, oh, don't worry, just classify as co-ed or do whatever. And we're like, these are communities that we craft together, right? Like, we have gone through things together. We went through COVID together, our league, and we really supported each other. And yeah, so really for us, the choice came down to, do we stand and abide by this policy or not? And so the NCAA is going to leave USA Hockey. Like, we decided as a league that we're just not going to fund anymore. We're not going to pay while they figure it out. Like, we may come back in the future, but the truth is that, our values as a community just don't stand by supporting something like this. And yeah, we just, it felt like they either didn't know the impact of the policy or they didn't care, and really neither is okay. And so our only choice in these communities is to stand up together. And I'm a cisgender female. I would have been able, it wouldn't have impacted me directly, but what I heard from our transgender players was just how exhausting it is to have to fight for your existence in spaces. And then here you are in rec league hockey with a community that has accepted you, and now you're having to defend yourself again. So for me as a cisgender female, as allies, like, right now is the time for it to be a verb. To say, yeah, we're taking our money, we're walking, like, we're not subjecting any of our community to this, like, and helping folks just know that they're not gonna fight this alone anymore. Like, there are real allies out there that are really ready to stand up and figure out how to not be part of systems that don't serve us and maybe don't really care about us sometimes. Doesn't feel like they do. So yeah, that's been the impact of this policy on our league. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I am really heartened to hear that the National Women's Hockey League or Northern California Women's Hockey League is leaving USA Hockey. It makes sense. So well explained. Thank you, Eula. Kieran, you have big thoughts on this too. Obviously,
Big
it's very,
thoughts.
very, very harmful.
Big thoughts. I mean, underlying the policy is the implication that transgender persons are not trustworthy or that they're even dangerous, that they're somehow trying to get some unfair advantage or that they're going to do harm to their teammates or to their opponents. And that is just crap. It's just simply not true. We can trust people for who they are, and we can trust that people know who they are. It's outrageous for them to be saying that they're going to be determining from USA Hockey what individual teams can decide easily on their own, or if not easily, at least engage in deciding on their own. I mean, the other thing that I find so offensive is that USA Hockey is now going the route of acquiescing to what amounts to bullying by the federal administration, because the legality of an EO like that, of an executive order like this, is dubious, and the applicability of it is not necessary for an organization, for the national governing bodies. And what they're doing is they're being just like higher education institutions or those, platinum law firms or, traditional media organizations or everyone else who has just acquiesced to the bullying and then found out later that they didn't have to. They could have done the right thing and they could have stood up to it. They could have engaged in something different. and at least tried to do something different and gotten support from people when they did come under attack. So I just think it's very, very wrong, and I'll stop there. I think I've said enough.
And I should mention, Karen, you worked in government relations for a long time, so you do know of what you speak when it comes to that kind of policy. Brock, is there anything that you want to speak on to this? Obviously, you and I are both Canadian and have our own crosses to bear with Hockey Canada.
But also I do work with USA Hockey, and I just question, who did they consult on this? Number one, and how did you not do a critical analysis of impact? And then beyond that, like Eula said, like even like at a recreational level, and what Kieran said about like the impact it's having on these people and the perception it creates about them, like that's psychologically damaging to an individual, and also societally, the impression it gives society about people who make up less than 1% of the population, like how many trans people are actually playing hockey at a recreational level, let alone competitively and whatnot. And I go back to, in my work, I go speak at a lot of places, and I had a trans kid. I was sitting at a hockey game, an NHL game, with this trans boy. And we're sitting together and we're talking, and he had been kicked out of his home. Comes from an affluent family, had season tickets to an NHL team. He grew up playing girls hockey in a major urban center in Canada. And he came out as trans to his family, and they kicked him out of the house. He was 15, living in a shelter for queer youth. And he's at this hockey game, and he's looking at the ice and telling me how much joy it used to bring him to go to these games with his family. Like, his family had Leafs season tickets. Like, those are incredibly expensive. You know what I
Yes.
mean? Like, and just let their kid go on the street. And I think about our sport and how much joy just watching gave him. And I think about how empowering it could be for so many, and it could be a distraction from everything going on in society that are attacking these people. And it could be an empowerment tool, so they feel good and they get a distraction for a couple of hours. And there we are ripping that from them. There we are taking that without even any consideration of the impact that will have at a recreational level of all things. And I go, what the hell is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? It's the end of my rant. I was going to swear, but I tried.
Amen. Well, we'll have to bleep it out, but no, I see how emphatic you are, and thank you for putting voice to that. Yeah, I agree. So let's, in conclusion, end on something happy and uplifting. Let's maybe just we'll go around and talk about I don't know if there is a positive to the heated rivalry effect. What would you like to see, and what do you want to happen in season two? And I'll just start by saying I want it to continue to be happily ever after, because I don't want any disappointments. I want Ilya and Shane to love each other forever. Kieran.
So I'm along for the fantasy, and I hope that it just continues with the unabated romance and sex positive elements, and that progress continues to be made, and that there's positive depictions. I absolutely know, like Eula's team, that we have interest that has just ballooned in our program. We'll be doing a Hockey with Pride program for new skaters on April 26th, and existing skaters who are looking to get to know a queer team better. We're talking about doing a second one because the interest level has been so high across many skill levels, And so we think that'll be great. We're looking forward to playing the Leafs on Pride Night. And thanks to luminary players like Tyler Toffoli and Alex Wennberg, who joined us for the Pride scrimmage, we'll be in a suite there. So I imagine there'll be some people sporting their "I'm coming to the cottage" t-shirts when they're at the Pride game versus Toronto, April 2nd.
I actually think the Sharks giveaway that day is I'm coming to the cottage shirt too. So everybody can have one.
Everybody can have one.
Yes, Eula, what's the dream and what do you hope for season two? She's finishing her book now. Jacob
Yeah,
too.
no, I mean the level of excitement is just really, really amazing. Like I said, we've seen such an upsurge, and I do want to speak a little bit positively. One maybe positive takeaway about the eligibility policy with USA Hockey, which is we had 90% of our league vote to leave. Like there is real support, and I just really want to say that there are, it's time for allies to be called in too. Like I really heard from our transgender skaters just how tired they are in these spaces and how much. And so what I would want anyone to leave with from this conversation from my end and from what we're doing at the NCHL is just allyship has got to be a verb right now. Like let's stand up together. Folks don't need to stand up alone. Like it's so important. So I think that with the excitement of USA Hockey and the joy that it I'm sorry, of heated rivalry and the joy that it is bringing to our communities and whatnot, like I hope that even at the grassroots, even if it's just at the grassroots level for a while, that positivity can really grow in hockey, and that the communities that many of us do still play in, and that we have a strong sense of belonging with each other. I think that's something special about rec hockey, and so sometimes we have to fight for it, and I hope we'll fight together, to make sure that we can stay really inclusive and be a place where folks can yeah, have fun.
Thanks, Eula. And Brock, what's the dream and what should happen to Shane and Ilya?
So I think first and foremost, I hope it continues to lead to more marginalized folks feeling safe at the rink, and that we have more representation at the rink at all games where you go to a PW game and people feel safe. I know for a fact that, women, queer folks, BIPOC folks, etc., don't always feel safe at NHL games. And the more we exist in these spaces, the safer it'll become. So I hope that continues to grow. Number one. Number two, I hope that a light continues to be shone on groups like the Earthquakes, like Chicago Pride Hockey, like all the groups across Toronto, Pride Hockey Group, etc., 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 Seattle, Vancouver, New York, etc., and continues to show the incredible work that people like Kieran and others have been doing for so long. Because I don't think they get the fanfare and through all this. I think all the light should have been shone on all of them, because they've been at it and doing this work and carrying that torch and pushing us forward for so damn long. I think also people like Eula and allies who are sitting there saying, "No, this isn't okay," and are coming forward right now. I think the light should be shone on everyone in those spaces. And as for the show, I mean, the way season one went, by the end of season two, everyone's going to be gay, so maybe they'll integrate a straight person at some point, and they'll be the minority in the DEI hire. So, but no, I don't know. I just hope that it continues to be fun and joyful, and everyone continues to enjoy it and find hockey.
Yeah, thank you so much. And you are so right about the people on the ground doing the work, and Eula and Kieran. That's why you're here. And Brock, of course, the work you do too. Thank you all so much for this. This was really fun, and we should do it again. We should pick it up again. But I'll see you all at the tank soon. And thanks for this. Thank you to Eula, to Brock, to Kiki. I am so grateful for you all, for your voices, for your counsel. Please support the Quakes and the NCWHL when and where you can. These programs are so important. I am also very happy to report that the Sharks Women of Teal jersey auction raised $5,000 for the NCWHL. So that's amazing. And by the way, Thursday, April 2nd, is the Sharks' annual Pride game at SAP Center. They'll be taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Game time, 7 p.m. local. A limited number of tickets are still available. I'm telling you, it's a full house every night now. So if you want to go, buy one right now. I will be back in a couple weeks with more of The Undercurrent. Until then, keep your sticks on the ice and your fins above water.